The Treasury Salute, featuring Jim Amici as guest narrator in A Salute to a Hero of the War, Sergeant Max M. Greenberg. Now, the Treasury salute to Sergeant Max M. Greenberg.
In 1935, when he was 18 years old, Max Greenberg enlisted in the United States Army. When the recruiting sergeant asked him why, Max explained,
"Well, you get 3 square meals a day, and I like sports, especially boxing, and I like it because it's nice and quiet."
At the time of Pearl Harbor, Max was in the Philippines with the 31st Infantry. He was with them that December when they retreated to Bataan. By February, the whole Bataan Peninsula was bloody with Japanese mortar fire. Clothing was in rags, shoes were torn, food was rice and mule meat. Yes, their own pack animals, and hardly a man was without a wound. But it was nice and quiet for the death. Max was hit twice. One Jap bullet tore his forehead open. The other went into his cheek and came out of his neck. And he was in the field hospital on April 9th, 1942, when Bataan fell. A Japanese captain came into his ward with an interpreter.
You are to get...
The captain says, attention!
What do they want
first? Why don't they... The captain says, you stand up!
Stand up, I have...
Walk here!
The captain says, put your clothes on!
Atsumare ichiretsu hutan inarame!
The captain says, fall in! Line up in one column.
Stay there, Max. Don't get out of bed. I'm the doctor here, Mr. Interpreter. You tell the captain these men are sick and they can't get out of bed. They can't be moved. Tell him that.
Demare hayaku.
The captain says keep quiet and hurry up.
Then I want to see his commanding officer about this.
Ogatare utsutsu.
The captain says, doctor, if you move, he will shoot.
This is an outrage.
Ayashi. Tuzui.
The captain says, double time.
And that was the beginning of the death march. For 6 days of nightmare, our men marched. Those who lived marched to Camp O'Donnell, a hell on earth, where hundreds more of our men died and where 40,000 Philippine patriots perished. After 6 tormenting weeks at Camp O'Donnell, the American prisoners were lined up, tattered, thirsty, hungry, barefoot, and again marched across Luzon to another cemetery for the living, Gabanatuan. The order of the day was hard labor 5 a.m. to 6 p.m., starvation 24 hours daily. Then one day, after who knows how long, Max was given a job taking care of the Japs' livestock, animals and ducks. One evening, he came back from the duck farm to his barrack.
Eddie.
Huh?
Eddie, wake up. What is it?
Oh, Max. I thought it was the guard again.
You didn't work in the field today, did you?
No, I can't move, and the bottom of my feet are all torn up. The Jap guard said I gotta get up tomorrow. All 5 pounds of me.
You'll be all right, boy.
Hey, somebody took my shoes.
I took them, Eddie. Here they are.
You? Why, they'd fall apart if you put them on.
I know, I didn't wear them. But look what I got for you in the shoe.
An egg!
Shh! Not so loud.
Where'd you get it?
It's a duck egg. Take it. I boiled it with my rice water.
How'd you get it? Wasn't the guard there?
Sure, I had the shoes tied around my neck, and I just bent over and threw an egg.
Brother.
Hey, we've got to bury the shell.
Go ahead, Max. You take some.
No, eat it. I swiped the radish from the hogs tonight.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm going to swipe an egg tomorrow for myself. Only trouble is, you got to wear your shoes. I got to get a pair someplace.
No, shoes weren't rationed. They just didn't have any. Everything they had, they made. Like the American surgeon's scalpel made out of a mess kit knife. Cut off from the world and after years of starving, few men believed they would ever get out of Cabanatuan alive. And then in September 1944, there was a small glimmer of hope. Hope that came out of thirst for news.
Max, come here.
What's up, Eddie?
You know that tall colonel up the street?
Yeah.
Fellow who knows something about radio?
Yeah.
He's been making a radio.
Making one? Out of what?
That's where we come in.
What do they need?
Some very fine wire.
Uh-huh.
They already got some stuff. And they need an earphone.
Yeah.
But it's got to be very small.
I know where there's a set. I heard the Japs talking about it.
Uh-huh.
So how are they going to hide the radio?
They got a place. They made a false bottom for it. In a water canteen.
The men got all the parts from the Japs, and the tiny radio worked. The aerial was a clothesline, a lifeline carrying the news of the world, and every prisoner got the news. And then one day, January 8th, 1945, a heavy force of planes flew high over the camp. And 20 minutes later...
Hey, listen to that. Hey, Max, you hear that?
Yeah, Eddie. Couldn't be Japs.
Maybe it's Russians.
I don't know. I can't see any. It sounds like they're bombing Clark Field.
Clark, that's 40 miles away.
Well, that's where it's coming from.
Look, Max. Jap planes taking off there. Three of them.
Eddie, look there. American planes. Mustangs. Brother, look at them coming. They're after the Japs. Brother, they're here. Give it to them. Give it to them. Good.
And then on January 31st, out of the quiet of the night...
Hey, Max, that sounds funny.
Must be another guerrilla raid, Eddie. Except that it sounds like an awful lot of firing.
Stuff's awful close.
We better start digging in.
Come out! Come on out!
Who's that?
Hurry, everybody!
Hey, he's talking American, Eddie.
Anybody in here? Come on, it's the Yanks. You're free. Out of the barracks, everybody. Hurry, we're taking you with us. Now, don't stare, buddy. It's an American flashlight. You're free. Please, come on, free!
Yes, it was the Yanks. The 6th Ranger Infantry raiding Cabanatuan, 25 miles behind the lines, killing 200 Japs in 10 minutes to free 511 men. All that was left in a prison camp that once held 10,000. With litter cases and all, they hiked 25 miles that night, while the Rangers and Filipino guerrillas fought off the Japs along the road to life. For Max, the road went on back home through hospitals. In May 1945, after he reached the States, he got a furlough and went home to Miami, Florida. He arrived there early one morning and went to the coffee shop, which his father owned. He found it closed and went next door to ask about it.
Could you please tell me about what time Mr. Greenberg opens his shop?
I'm surprised it's closed now. Let's see. Yes, I guess it is closed. Why, there he is now.
Yes. Yes, that's him. I'm Max, his son.
His son? But I thought his son...
Could you do me a favor, please? You know, tell him slowly.
All right. You'd better stay here. Maybe he'll know you himself.
No. No, he never saw me looking like this.
Good morning, Mr. Greenberg.
Good morning, Mrs. Lowe.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
What is it?
Do you have a son in the Army?
I had a son, yes. He was a prisoner. Lost him.
Don't you think maybe...
Maybe he's alive. Maybe. We've prayed God for it.
Would you know him if you saw him?
Would I know... Who are you?
You don't recognize me?
No. You knew Max?
Look hard, Papa. Look at me. Do I look like Max?
Max? No.
Yes, Pa. It's me.
Mac.
Pa.
Oh, Mac.
It was a wonderful furlough with the family. Proud of their son and his decorations. 11 of them, including the Presidential Unit Citation and the Silver Star for heroism beyond the call of duty. And it was easy to learn how to live like a human being again. But the flesh is stubborn, and the healing of ugly old wounds takes more than willpower. It takes the hands of a skilled surgeon. In June 1945, Max entered Valley Forge General Hospital outside Philadelphia. And for the next 7 months, the miracles of plastic surgery worked to seal the holes in his cheek, his neck, and his forehead. Then one day in January, the doctor told him...
Well, Max, it looks like you're pretty near ready to go.
Thanks, Doc. Thanks a lot. It looks swell. And I'm back to my fighting weight, 165 pounds.
Mm, that's 65 pounds better than a year ago when you were freed from prison camp.
Yeah.
Well, have you definitely made up your mind about what you're going to do after your discharge?
Sure, Doc. I only got 20 years to go.
What do you mean?
Well, Doc, I'm deep down inside a 30-year man. I'm re-enlisting. You see, I like sports, and really, it's nice and quiet in the Army, too.
During the war, millions of Americans bought war bonds. And after the war, during the Great Victory Loan, they bought victory bonds. Today, your government is selling United States savings bonds. These bonds are exactly the same as the war bonds you purchased during the last few years. They pay the same rate of interest. They will pay $4 at maturity for every $3 invested. They're registered in your own name, a protection against theft, and if they're stolen or lost, these bonds can be replaced. United States savings bonds are readily convertible into cash should an emergency arise. Like war bonds, they can be redeemed at your local bank. Yes, and you can buy them the way you bought your war bonds, either through the payroll savings plan or at your own bank or post office. So you can see that United States savings bonds are exactly the same as your war bonds. They just have a brand new name now that the war is over. For your own future, buy them and hold them. The United States Treasury thanks Jim Amici, James McCallion, and the other distinguished artists who appeared on this specially transcribed program. The Treasury Salute was written by Malvin Farmer and directed by Mark Goodson. The music was under the direction of Mark Warno. This is David Allen speaking. Remember, buy United States savings bonds and hold them. They are an investment in your future, your country's future, and your future.